Hare Krishna. Not yesterday, obviously, but the day before, we had a class. And first question is, who remembers what book we were reading? Huh? Okay. And what chapter did we read? We completed the first chapter, actually. And in that chapter, there are three parts. The first part is the response of Maharaj Prickett to his hearing from Sukadeva Goswami about Krishna. He wanted to hear more. And he glorified the process of hearing, and he glorified Srila Sukadeva Goswami for being able to speak Muni Sattamam, the best of Munis, to be able to speak about Krishna. And then, in the second part, we went to a more subtle realm where the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Bhumi Devi, they went to the ocean of milk, and there they presented their distress to Lord Chiradaksha Vishnu, who responded through Brahma and spoke about the different, that he was going to incarnate, he was going to come, and he gave instructions for them. He gave instructions that they, the devatas, should all come to the earth as members of the Yadu dynasty, etc. Then in the third part, we began with, who remembers? Raise your hand if you remember. Yes. Vasudev? Yes, but that was a little bit later. First, there was the wedding in Mathura was taking place, and Kamsa was driving the chariot. Yes, and then there was that voice in the sky, and then Kamsa tried to kill Devaki. And then Vasudev, okay, discuss now for a few minutes what happened after that, from there to the end of the chapter. Go ahead. In twos and threes. Yes. And see if you can remember all the way to the end of the chapter, but you only have a few minutes. And don't forget Narada Muni. And he came. Okay, thank you. Om Ganatamyanandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam Vancha Kaupa Trubhyascha Kripa Sundubai Bacha Patitanam Pabilebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. At the end of the first chapter, when Narada Muni had spoken to Kamsa, which in and of itself was incredible, and especially since he spoke so directly that the devatas have all come as the members of the Yadu dynasty and Nanda Maharaj, they're all devatas, your enemies. And they've come to remove the burden of the earth, basically to kill you and all of your friends. And also, he told him, or our acharyas, some acharyas say it a little bit differently than the others, but very little bit differently, say that he told him, or he caused Narada Muni to cause Kamsa to remember his previous birth as the demon Kalanemi, which in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, there is a pastime about the churning of the ocean of milk. And then after that, and before that as well, there was a fight between the demigods and the demons, the devatas and the asuras. They were fighting and killing each other. And Lord Vishnu, he had taken the side of the demigods, of course, as he always does. And then in that fight, there was one person who is a son or a grandson. It's instead of devatas, and it's monkey versus monkey. It's over. It seems to be the nature of the material world. Politics inside versus this side and that side. So when the fight was going on, Kalanemi, who was a son or grandson of Hiranyakashipu, he was a demon. And he was very, very powerful. And he was fighting against Lord Vishnu. So this is described in Prabhupada's purport and the commentary of the Acharyas. And there's one verse in the Bhagavatam in the 8th canto that describes what happened in the battle. Maharaj Prickett hears from Narada Muni, when the great demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, he was riding a lion, when he saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead carried by Garuda was on the battlefield. So soon as he saw him there, immediately he wanted to attack him. So he picked up his trishul, his trident, and he whirled it and threw it at Garuda's head. But Lord Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of the three worlds and who cannot be killed, he immediately caught the trident. And with that very same weapon, he killed Kalanemi along with his carrier that was a lion. So at that point, the Puranas actually describe how Kalanemi was brought back to life by Sukracharya using the Sanjivani miracle medicine. And then later, he took his birth as Kamsa. And he had inherently enmity with Krishna. He was a demon. And that's basically how one defines a demonic person, one who has enmity with the Supreme Lord. And this is a completely non-sectarian concept. Not only Krishna, but God or Ishwara, whatever. But someone who has enmity, saying that no one is the Supreme but me, Ishwaraham Mahambogi, Siddham Balavan Sukhi. We will prove that you don't exist. And actually, the modern scientists, I have to say, a lot of them do fit into this category. They have such enmity with God, with Krishna. So there is another part of this also that's described in Prabhupada's purports, how in that previous birth, there were six different sons of Marici who had taken their birth from Kalanemi. They were Kalanemi's children, and they were actually devatas, but because they criticized Lord Brahma, they were cursed to take their birth as demons, so they took their birth as the children of Kalanemi, and they decided that they wanted to gain great power, so they began to worship Lord Brahma. So Hiranyakashipu didn't like anyone to worship anyone but him. this is the nature of a demon. Because as we have mentioned quite a few times in this class, the nature of the demonic mind, the nature of any mind that is filled with false ego, is that he considers himself the center. And naturally, there is a feeling of offense. Someone, and this goes for everyone in the material world, neglects that person who has false ego. And we probably all experience this every now and then, when someone doesn't acknowledge that we're how our importance, our being in the center, then we become very offended. And sometimes we cover that up with a nice smile, and sometimes we become angry. And Hiranyakashipu, seeing that his own descendants were worshipping Brahma to get power while he was there, and he wanted to be the sum total of all power, he became so angry, he cursed them, that you're neglecting me, and as a result of this, you're going to be killed by your own father. You're not respecting me. You will be killed by your own father. So these six sons of Kalanemi, who were actually devatas originally, they took their birth one by one in the womb of Devaki, and they were killed by Kamsa. They call the Satgarbha. They were killed by Kamsa one by one by one. And in that way, they were actually liberated from the curse. So it's very interesting how there are things go on so many different levels at once. And we're generally only aware of one small level. And on that small level, we are the center, just like an ant that's walking on a piece of rope or something like that. And he has no idea that that rope is a part of this big pundal. He's just walking on his rope, and he's wondering why the rope is shaking and he has to hold on so tightly. But there's something far greater going on, greater than his ability to understand, because his consciousness is so small. So we have the tendency, covered by our false ego, and thinking in our limited way, as if we were the center, just like the ant thinking that he's the center, can't understand or perceive or even accept that we are part, a small part of a greater picture. That we're a small part. And that there's devatas, there's demigods, more subtle realms of existence. And there's interactions that are going on a more subtle level that are affecting us deep as concretely as the shaking of the rope is going to affect the ant, and the ant may even fall off. But he has no idea why he's falling off. He just, in his dullness, in his small brain, he just knows that this, he doesn't even know it's shaking. He just, I don't remember what he knows. But it's hard to, actually philosophers, there's a famous whole line of philosophy that it starts like, what does it feel like to be a bat? Because we have no idea what it feels like to be a bat or a monkey or a small ant. We have no idea, nor do we have an idea even what it felt like to be a baby anymore, a small child whose consciousness is not yet mature, it's compressed. But there's so much more to existence than we have awareness of. And of course, and one of the points that's going to come up later in this chapter is that everything in existence, from the grossest elements of existence to the most subtle elements of existence on all different levels, are all connected and are maintained and based on, and they're not, and they all have a relationship with Krishna. Everything has a relationship with Krishna, and therefore he is called the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. So much of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam is explaining this point. It's a very jnana point. But everything has a connection to the Supreme Lord, even loud ringtones. There is nothing separate from him. Everything is included in his energy. Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava. There is nothing independent of him, external to him. So Kamsa, meanwhile, was told that he, in a previous life, was Kalanemi. And that brought still further to the surface, brought right to the surface of his consciousness, his enmity with Lord Vishnu, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That hatred of the Supreme Lord, who was the one who had killed him, he wanted to kill, he attacked first. He saw the Lord on the battlefield and he immediately went to kill him. So that was such an essential part of his consciousness. And that remained with him always. So based on that, that the devatas, and he didn't consider Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly the unlimited Lord, but he considered him the root of all and the basis of all the demigods. That's how he viewed him. So the chapter begins with Kamsa, or the last chapter, chapter one ended, which I really didn't speak very much about or emphasize, that he immediately started persecuting the Yadus. As soon as Narada had spoken to him, he understood that there was a conspiracy going on against him by the demigods. And he immediately started persecuting the Yadus, and he immediately started giving extra trouble to the children of Vasudeva and Devaki as they came one by one. He persecuted them, and there was so much trouble that he gave them that they most of them just fled their area, and that comes up very, very soon. So he also put his father Ugrasena in prison, and he became the king. And as the last verse in the first chapter describes, that Kamsa enjoyed the kingdom of Surasena. But as we all know, that no one enjoys anything forever. So his time was also coming too. So the first several verses of the second chapter begin here. Under the protection, Sukadeva is speaking, under the protection of Magadharaj and Jarasandha, the powerful Kamsa began persecuting the kings of the Yadu dynasty. Go ahead. In this he had the cooperation of demons like Pralambasura, Bhaka, Chanura, Trinavarta, Agasura, Mushtika, Arista, Dvidvid, Putana, Keshi, Dunuka, Banasura, Narakasura, and many other demoniac kings on the surface of the earth. The Gaugasamhita describes how Kamsa became so powerful and how he made alliances with these kings. And these, of course, we all know from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, they attack Krishna and Krishna kills each and every one of them, practically speaking, one after the other. But the Gaugasamhita describes that after Kamsa took his birth as Kamsa, he performed austerities to please Lord Brahma, very similar to the austerities that Hiranyakashipu had performed that are described in which canto? seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. And he asked Brahma for a benediction, and Brahma benedicted him. He asked Brahma for the benediction of not to be able to be killed by any demigod. So he was so powerful because he had been fighting the demigods before, and he considered Vishnu even one of the demigods. So he was so powerful, and he took that power and began making alliances. And what he would do, it describes how he, I don't remember the name of the kingdom, but he went into, which one of these mentioned is a wrestler? Mustika. So he went into the kingdom where Mustika and Chanura and Sala and Toshala were very prominent. And he walked in them. They were so powerful. They were powerful wrestlers. And he said, I challenge you to fight. And if I defeat you, then you must become my servant. And if you defeat me, then I will become your servant. But he was so powerful, he immediately would take them and he would throw them to the ground or punch them or smash them or throw them into the air. And in that way, he conquered one after the other. He conquered Dhanuka like that. He conquered Keshi. He rode Keshi and then beat him into submission. And Aristasura the same, and Agasura. He began strangling him. Agasura, who, as a python, Ajagara, he strangles his prey, and Kamsa was strangling him, and Trinavarta, one after the next, Bakasura, Keshi, one after the next. Kamsa approached them and made them his servants. And Jarasandha appreciated his mood because he was quite the demon himself, and he appreciated his power, and they made an alliance, and Jarasandha, to solidify the alliance, he gave his two daughters, Asti and Prapti, to Kamsa to marry. So all this comes up later in the as the Bhagavatam progresses and as Krishna performs his pastimes. So there he was, so powerful. And also, the Gauga Samhita describes What was the reason why Akura or Kamsa went, sent Akura to Vrindavan? What was the excuse that he gave to invite Krishna and Balaram to come? That there was going to be a wrestling match, but what was the occasion? There was a sacrifice. Dano means bow. So the Gauga Samhita describes this bow, which is described as Lord Shiva's bow, how Kamsa got this bow. And this is an important point that will come out of this, that Kamsa, he was so powerful, he went to the mountain where Parsaram was staying, and he began lifting it and dropping it. And lifting it and dropping it. He was that powerful. And lifting it and dropping it and lifting and dropping it until Parsaram became so angry at him. Because Parsaram wasn't very fond of Kshatriyas. So he came to Kamsa and said, You insignificant crab. You're like a mosquito. I'm going to kill you. You Kshatriyas are all the same, so proud. And Kamsa said to him, I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm a Rakshasa. And why he actually wasn't a Kshatriya, although he's known as the son of Ugrasena, Gauga Samhita, as also mentioned in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, describes how once Kamsa's mother, whose name was, I think, Padmavati, she had gone to her father's house, and a Rakshasa named Gobila became attracted to her. And he disguised himself in the form to look like Ugrasena, and then he approached her. And the child born out of that marriage, that nowadays you would call that abusive relationship, was Kamsa. So he was the son of a Rakshasa, actually, and he put Ugrasena, his his father, Ugrasen, accepted him anyway, even though he was aware of this. He put him in prison. So when Kamsa said to Parsaram that I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm a Rakshasa, and then he prayed to Parsaram with very sweet prayers, and Parsaram was very pleased with him. And he pointed to this bow over here, which in the Bhagavatam it is described as like Indra's bow. It was that big, which means the rainbow. It was big and strong. And he said to him, if you can string this bow, it is yours. But if you fail to string it, it will take away all your power. And Kamsa went to it and effortlessly, practically speaking, strung it. But then Parsaram said, if anyone can break this bow, that person will be the cause of your death. So later on, when it's the time for Kamsa's death, or right before that time, when Krishna walked into Mathura and he stepped over to that bow and he broke it like that. He pushed all the soldiers guarding it away and he broke that bow, and Kamsa heard that snap, that cracking sound of the broken bow, and he knew that that sound meant that the purpose, that the end of his life was near, and the person who had broken it would cause his death. And he couldn't sleep from that moment on. So this was Kamsa, and he was taking over, basically, the world. And he persecuted by the demoniac kings, the Yadavas, who were basically devatas, had taken their birth. They left their own kingdom and they entered various other kingdoms like the Kurus, the Panchalas, Kekeyas, Salvas, Vidarbas, Nishadas, Videyas, and Kosa. They went, they spread themselves throughout basically the kingdoms in northern India at that time. And some of them, they just hid in caves. Some of them dressed as if they were cowherd men. They were so terrified of Kamsa, who was a Rakshasa, that means a man-eater. And then some of them, however, like Akrura, began to follow Kamsa's principles and act in his service, but not for the purpose of they didn't actually become subservient to Kamsa on one level. They were just waiting, like it's clear that Akrura, for example, he stayed in Mathura with Kamsa and he gained Kamsa's trust because he wanted to see the advent of Krishna. Everyone knew, everyone heard that voice in the sky, that Asariravak. Everyone knew that the Lord was coming. And they wanted to see that, and they also wanted to see the sending back to the liberation from the curse of the Sadgarbhas, the sons of Marici. So they stayed around. They would advise Kamsa. They would be respectful, but inside they were just waiting for his death because he was a demon. So after Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, and our acharyas mentioned that Sukadeva Goswami was so upset with him, he wouldn't even call him by his name. He killed killed the six sons of Devaki, a plenary portion of Krishna entered her womb as her seventh child, arousing her pleasure and her lamentation. Arousing her pleasure because the Lord had entered, and this was Lord Balaram, Lord Ananta, Lord Shesha, Balaram, Shankarshan, had entered her womb. But her lamentation, because Kamsa had just killed six of her sons, one after the other, And she was sure that as soon as Kamsa knew that he had taken birth, that she had another child, and she knew it was the Supreme Lord, because she was so ecstatic due to his presence within her, that he was going, Kamsa would kill her, and that was her lamentation. Now, go to the next one. And that plenary portion is celebrated by the great sages as Ananta, who belongs to Krishna's second quadruple expansion, means who's the immediate expansion of Krishna in Vrindavan, known as Balaram. I wanted to read something from, yes, this very purport of Prabhupada's. So to protect the Yadus, his personal devotees, from Kamsa's attack, because Krishna protects all his devotees, but he, as Kunti Devi said, he was especially fond of the Yadu dynasty, because of the purity of Yadu, so he took his birth in there. So to protect the Yadus from Kamsa's attack, the personality of Godhead Vishvatma, who is the Vishvatma, the soul of the universe, the super soul, Chiradakshai Vishnu, who is in everyone's heart, he ordered his energy, his internal energy, Yogamaya, as follows. Now, before we go on to the next verse, I wanted to read some of Prabhupada's purport here. So the Yadus were so, what would be one word that would describe the emotion that they were feeling? Fear, exactly, because Kamsa was killing them. Now, previously, when Vasudeva was thinking, before he decided to promise Kamsa that he would hand over all the children to him, his sons to him, he specifically used the word putran, his sons to him, before that, he or before he actually made that decision, he mentioned, if you remember, that our fate is unpredictable. Really, no one knows how long they're going to be in this world. No one knows what's going to happen when they walk outside. I don't want to tell you all stories of disasters and things like that, and fill everyone with fear and anxiety. But at least we all know this and we accept this, even though we don't live that way in this world, practically speaking. You can't practically live thinking, I never know what's going to happen, the roof may cave in, a car may hit me. We're basically careful all the time, or a monkey may climb on take my glasses if I'm in Loy Bazaar in Vrindavan or something. Raise your hand if monkeys have ever taken your glasses. That's incredible. Me also. You? Why? Okay. So, no one knows what's going to happen. And listen, but it's important to understand this, but no one can live in that way, practically speaking, and go on in their life. Here's what Prabhupada says in his purport. The affairs of the supersoul, meaning Vishvatma, pertain to Chiradakshai Vishnu. But Krishna took compassion on Devaki, his devotee, because he understood her fear of Kamsa's persecution. Now, here is coming, this chapter I divide into two different parts, because there's a story going on, and the story, the pastime is, not a story exactly, but a pastime is going on of Krishna's birth. And Krishna immediately goes to Vrindavan. But there's something else going on philosophically too, is that the consciousness required to be in Vrindavan is being described, is going to be described. And so many devotees, or many times, and it happened maybe even four or five times here, a devotee wants to ask a question, and the question is very often, how do I become more pure? I have this attachment. How can I remove this attachment? How can I become more focused on Krishna? How can I? Really, what the question is, how can I advance in Krishna consciousness? How can I develop my love for Krishna ultimately? And that's the question that's in the spoken or unspoken question that's in the heart of every sincere soul. How can I advance in Krishna consciousness? How can I develop love for Krishna? So these parts of these early chapters of the 10th canto, and especially in this particular chapter, there's going to be a description of a two-part process for this. Now, the two parts aren't really two parts. They're, in one sense, we could say they're one part. But there's a two-part process of developing our love for Krishna, for becoming in relationship with the Absolute Truth, becoming in relationship with the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead who has lifted Govanand Hill, who performs his pastimes, who herds the cows, who steals butter, whose very form is a flowing river of bliss, whose effulgence, when Krishna walks in the forest becomes saffron, excuse me, like a sapphire. A bluish glow comes from that part of the forest. And the fragrance, when Krishna has walked in an area, the devotees, they can smell the sweet, musk-like, unique fragrance of Krishna. That's all attractive, as Krishna is all attractive. And they know that Krishna has been here. So we want to move closer to Krishna, and this chapter is going to tell us quite directly how to do that, and also how to remove the material attachments in our heart. And it won't only be said here, it's already been said before, and it will be said a little bit later, but it's quite interesting how this will be explained. So, here is one of the first principles. He understood Devaki's fear of Kamsa's persecution, so he came for that. A pure devotee is always fearful, Prabhupada says, of material existence. No one knows what will happen next. So this is more or less what Vasudeva had said about the fire jumping over one tree or one house and moving to and just going over it. And this is providence, this is fate. Practically speaking, there's no guarantee that tomorrow will be just like today. So a pure devotee, knowing this fact, a pure devotee acts in such a way that he will not have his life spoiled by being obliged to accept another body and undergo the tribulations of material existence. This is bhayam, or fear. So this is a healthy side of fear. And how this is healthy will be explained relatively soon. And then bhayam, a verse Prabhupada quote, cites from the 11th, second chapter of the 11th canto, Bhayam Dvitiya Abhinaveshita Syad. This fear is actually caused by seeing things inaccurately. That's the cause of fear. Seeing things in duality, that as if something is separate from Krishna, that is the cause of fear. So, this is the nature of material existence, and it's exactly the opposite of spiritual existence, which makes one fearless. Then Prabhupada continues. Properly speaking, everyone, so he started saying pure devotees, he's fearful, but properly speaking, everyone should always be alert and fearful of material existence. But although everyone is prone to be affected by the ignorance of material existence, the Supreme Personality of Krishna, of Godhead Krishna is always alert to the protection of his devotees. So this was also previously stated, and now it's a little more directly stated. If you remember that even if a devotee's mind, because we're supposed to always remember Krishna, and if we love Krishna, it's the most natural thing in the world. But if we're distracted, and this is exactly what Maya does, it distracts us from our relationship with Krishna. It distracts us from seeing everything in relationship to Krishna and seeing everything as Krishna's, as belonging to Krishna, and to be used in his service. Maya causes this vision to see things as separate from Krishna and as if they are meant for me and my pleasure. That's material vision, and Maya causes that vision. So everyone in the material world is prone or has the tendency to be affected by this ignorance of material existence and see the material world as if it's meant for me. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, if there's a devotee, or to speak of someone like Devaki, but a devotee who's trying to serve Krishna, because there's the pure devotees, and then there's the demons, and then there's those devotees who are the innocent ones who are trying to go to Krishna. Krishna is alert, always alert, to the protection of his devotees. So this example we see with Mother Yashoda in trying to bind Krishna, the theme of the month of Kartik. She's working so hard, but her work is required, parisrama, but it is not sufficient. It is necessary, but not sufficient to have her bind Krishna. So one finger stands for the work that the devotee does, his own or her own effort, and the second finger is Krishna's mercy. So Krishna is alert. He wants to give his mercy. He's compassionate. He's kind. He sees the sincerity of endeavors. And and he helps them by giving them the intelligence by which to exist in this material world without forgetting him for even a moment. When I read this, I thought, now that's the kind of intelligence that I would like. But please, Krishna, give me that kind of intelligence and ability to not forget you for even a moment, because due to ignorance, I'm so prone to forget you, and I'm so prone to see the material world as if it's just meant for me and my pleasure. And then I'm so prone to fall victim to everything that comes from that. And what comes from that? It comes the greed, it comes pride, it becomes envy, it comes madness, illusion, lust, anger. So Krishna is the giver of that type of intelligence. And Prabhupada then quotes from the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham eva na kamparatam aham ajnanam tama. Out of compassion for them, I dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So a process is described to go back home, back to Godhead, to Vrindavan, to live in Vrindavan, not so much by body, but by consciousness, by heart, by bhava, by a developed relationship with Krishna. A process is being described, and it's going to be described in more detail. And this process is going to have two parts. So then the Lord ordered Yogamaya, all my potency, who are worshipable for the entire world, and whose nature is to bestow good fortune upon all living entities. That's so interesting, that Maya is nature, it's her purpose is to bestow good fortune, and even Mahamaya, which is the keeper of the prison of the material world, it also Maya means mercy. So Krishna told Yogamaya, go to Braja, where there live many cowherd men and their wives. In that very beautiful land, he was encouraging her to go to Vrindavan, where many cows reside. There, Rohini, the wife of Vasudev, is living at the home of Nanda Maharaj. Other wives of Vasudev also living there incognito because of fear of Kamsa. Please go there. Go there, he told Yogamaya. And within the... And then... then the next verse. Within the womb of Devaki, because Lord Shankarshan was already there, is my partial plenary expansion. Plenary means complete, fully powerful, known as Shankarshan or Shesha, and without difficulty transfer him into the womb of Rohini. So I would like to read Prabhupada's purport here. There was a part of me that wanted to go over this section and very, very quickly, but there's so many wonderful things in it that I found myself unable to do that. Prabhupada says, this is part of Prabhupada's purport. In this connection, one may ask, the first plenary expansion of Krishna is Baladev, also known as Shesha. The Shesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead supports the entire universe. And the eternal mother of this incarnation is Mother Rohini. But here, Shesha, Shankarshan, is within the womb of Devaki. Because I am going, and this is the quotation that Prabhupada gives, Krishna speaking to Yogamaya, because I am going into the womb of Devaki, the Lord told Yogamaya, the Shesha incarnation has already gone there and made suitable arrangements so that I can live there, so I may live there. And now he should enter the womb of Rohini, his eternal mother. So the actual eternal mother of Balaram is not Devaki, but Rohini Devi. But Balaram Shankarshan had a particular specific function, and we're going to hear about that very soon. Now, Sanatana Goswami says, his comment is, if he is Shesha, who is beyond fear, he's all powerful, why transfer him out of the womb of Devaki out of fear of Kamsa? And Krishna answers Yogamaya's question. Now you can play the harmonium. Because he is my shelter. Transfer him to Gokul. And Krishna then says, without him, without Balaram, I cannot fulfill the happiness of my pastimes in Vrindavan. Now is Prabhupada's purport, and there's also a commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that I'd like to read, and Prabhupada's purport is based on that. He mentions that in his purport. And this purport has several parts, and the second part is especially the one I would like to emphasize. So the Sadgarbha, the six sons who were killed of one after the other by Kamsa, they were in the womb. Then Krishna was going to enter the womb. So the question may be asked, Prabhupada says, how could Krishna enter a place that's not completely pure, that was suitable for these demons to be in and killed, who they were, because they were the sons of Kalanemi in their last life. How could Krishna, who is supremely pure, more or less take the remnants of the Sadgarbhas? So this question could be asked. Does that mean that they're equal to Krishna? They can enter and be on the same level as Krishna? So the following answer is given by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada says. And I'll just explain it, this part, and then I'll read something. And it's an explanation of the Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy. How Krishna, just as he enters the universe, but he's not actually in the universe, even though the universe is not different from him, and he's everywhere. But when he enters as an incarnation, when he enters as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's not actually in the universe. He's situated in his own energy only. He's never touched by matter. But yet, all matter is resting on him, and yet he's in the universe. Just like he was in the belly of Mother Yashoda. So he's simultaneously in it, but actually not in it at all. And this is Krishna's mystic potencies. So Prabhupada ends this part of the purport by saying everything rests upon Krishna, and yet it doesn't rest on him. He's completely independent. So this is Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy. Simultaneously, Krishna is everything, but simultaneously an independent person. Now, here's the part that I wanted to especially emphasize. Now, that I had just summarized is very important when understanding, when we read the prayers when the demigods offer prayers to Krishna. This point is one of the essential points in there, so please don't delete it. Keep it in your memory, and you could even save it. So this is what Prabhupada says about that bhakti. This is towards the end of Prabhupada's purport. Only bhakti can bring one in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared from the womb of Devaki, and therefore, now please listen, Devaki symbolically represents bhakti, and Kamsa represents symbolically material fear. So the point that I had introduced this with a little while ago is how to push away the material attachments and our entanglement in matter, and all the desires that come, that spring from that seeing the material world as suitable for my enjoyment. This is the explanation of how to, this is, I will call this advancement part one. Kamsa symbolically represents, does anyone remember? Material fear of basically being entangled in matter, where anything can happen at any time, and I could lose everything. I could be riding on the road on my motorcycle, and some tractor hits me, and this happened to a great devotee maybe 3 years ago in Vrindavan, and I don't even want to say what happened. So one should keep in some part of his consciousness the actual reality that this is a very unstable place. Materialists stay in illusion to face fearing that. They take shelter of illusion. But if there's a fight between illusion and reality, who's going to win? Can illusion defeat reality? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Can illusion defeat reality? No. The example I tend to give for this, if there's a wall over here, it would work on this pole. If I, with all my strength, try to imagine that pole isn't there, and then I go running towards it with the full strength of my belief, that illusion is just, it's not going to stand up against the bamboo pole. It will be defeated. The illusion will be defeated. So a part of our consciousness should be aware of the reality of the material situation. We shouldn't take shelter of illusion. So two things have been defined. Bhakti, Devaki, and Kamsa representing fear of material existence. When a pure devotee, Prabhupada explains, always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested. Did you hear that? That within a devotee, raise your hand if you've experienced in your life that the unexpected, something terrible can actually happen at any time. Yes, that's as many people as have there. You haven't experienced that. You're too little. That's as many people who have had their glasses stolen by monkeys. That's a lot. I mean, that's heavy. And how quickly, you can't live in that consciousness, practically speaking. You can't always be thinking, oh, anything can happen anytime. But once it's happened to you in this life, there's a part of you that never forgets it. But when a pure devotee always fears material association, why does a pure devotee fear material association? Because he knows that's going to entangle me. Material association means not association with the material world, because the material world is Krishna's energy. And how could we not associate with the material world when we're living here? But associating with the material world, with material consciousness. So when a pure devotee, because it takes that type of sincerity to always fear material association, because one, practically speaking, has to really want the spiritual side of life. Because you can't just, I don't want to touch matter. You have to be motivated on the spiritual side, which is the second part of the process of advancement. He naturally becomes uninterested. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested. Is that clear? That when we stay away from the enjoying spirit, if we can avoid the enjoying spirit, then bhakti can manifest. And I didn't hear it directly, but it was well known in the early days that Prabhupada had said that the problem with you boys and girls, because at that time we were boys and girls, now he didn't say, now he would say, the problem with you old men and old ladies is that you don't have fear of Maya. We flirt, we play with Maya, and it's like playing with fire. And you can't artificially, practically speaking, from now on I'm going to. It doesn't work like that. It's something much deeper. A deeper transformation has to take place. An actual spirit of not wanting to entangle myself in the material world and being fearful of the result. I'm going to lose, and that's why a pure devotee can do it. Why he can remain steadily fearful, because he's thinking, somehow or another, by the mercy of Guru Vaishnavas, by the mercy of Krishna Balaram Radhashyamasan Nagornatai, by the mercy of Vrindavan, somehow I've been given this a jewel, by the mercy of the holy names, by the mercy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the mercy of the devotees, I've got a glimpse of this jewel. And this jewel is so valuable. Even I've just got a glimpse of it. It's not mine. I don't possess it. I haven't fully made it mine. But I've glimpsed it enough to know that if I get more entangled and I allow this entanglement to grow, this material consciousness to grow, I'm going to lose my jewel. And therefore, he's fearful of that, even though he's a pure devotee and doesn't have the tendency to enjoy matter. And that is why he's a pure devotee. That type of sincerity is required for bhakti, the real position of bhakti to be manifest. And he naturally, not artificially, from now on, I'm not going to eat any strawberry ice cream, or I'm not going to do it. Strawberry ice cream, I'm not going to eat it. I'm not going to eat strawberry ice cream. I'm not going to eat strawberry. Do you like strawberry ice cream in the summer? What? Oh, yes. Oh, sorry. But naturally, it happens naturally due to the fear of losing the jewel that will come from material entanglement. He naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. When the six sons of Maharishi are killed by such fear, Kamsa kills the six sons. When the six sons are killed by such fear, one is freed from material contamination within the womb. And then, due to the fear, the six sons are killed. And Prabhupada will describe what those six sons are. And within the womb of bhakti, which naturally manifests when those come, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. Thus, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead after the six sons come, crowed, lobe, moha, mada, and matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy, when they are gone because of fear of entanglement in material existence and losing the wealth of my life. Then, after that happens, then the Shesha incarnation, that's Balaram Shankarshan, creates a suitable situation for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what is that Shesha incarnation? Balaram? That was a rhetorical question that I'll tell you the answer to. It's Prema Bhakti. The Dham is set up in the purified heart. The situation, the land that attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Prema Bhakti, and later perhaps Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will say Balabhadra, his strength is not physical strength, or Prabhupada says it, I believe, because by physical strength one can't cause the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do anything, because he's the strongest of the strongest, but it's by his strength of prema. So Balaram's strength is his strength of prema, and so much so that Krishna has just said, according to Vishwanath that I just read to you, that Krishna is saying, without Balaram coming, I can't have my pastimes in Vrindavan. That's prema. That Krishna, who is complete in and of himself, needs Balaram. Krishna needs the residence of Vrindavan. There, it's on, from the level of philosophy, he's interplaying with his energy. But from the level of rasa, they have so much love that the all-attractive, all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot live without them. And therefore, Vrindavanam pratyaja padamekam nagacchati. Krishna can never leave Vrindavan. In other words, Prabhupada completes the purport, when one awakens his natural Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna appears. Natural Krishna consciousness, what's natural is prema. And then Krishna appears. This is the explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, I'll just read this. I'll try to do it quickly, and then we'll ask you to turn to Kiriraj. But please listen. Please listen carefully. The conjunction, please listen carefully. The conjunction, the meeting of material and spiritual in the pastimes is there to illustrate the methodical nature of bhakti. While devotees perform sadhana bhakti in the form of hearing and chanting, internally, when we engage in Krishna consciousness, internally there exists material enjoyment of the six objects of the senses. So there is a tendency to enjoy through the processes of bhakti. This is how Vishwanath explains it, and Prabhupada has taken it to the next step, to the result of this spirit of enjoyment, of wanting to enjoy bhakti even. He's taken it to the point of kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarja, and which one did I? Madness, yes. So this is a secondary effect of bhakti, that it's so enjoyable. The devotee, in other words, the spirit, and we're also told that we have to be able to enjoy prasadam, we have to be able to enjoy the kirtan, but we're also told prasadam seva, the service of taking prasadam, and the chant for the pleasure of Krishna. So, subtle difference. And we're told that we can use everything in the world in the service of Krishna. And I think, oh, how great, when I buy my new Mercedes-Benz car, I'm going to, and my Alfa Romeo and my Ferrari cars, then I'm going to really use them in the service of Krishna. This can come through bhakti. But if that enjoying spirit is going to cause me to lose the jewel that is really valuable to me, and yet knowing that the tendency is there, Vishwanath says, the devotee then cries out pitifully, oh, because of this enjoyment, I will fall into the material well of darkness. By manifesting fear of material enjoyment, gradually the tendency to enjoy matter subsides, lessens. Then, step one and step two, it seems like by how long it's taken me to move through step one, that step two will be tomorrow. There was a part of me that hoped I could do that today and put the pieces together, but it doesn't seem like it. Then bhakti in the form of hearing and chanting the names and glorifying the forms, qualities and pastimes of the Lord and serving in various ways, then that will become prominent. The serving will become prominent and Krishna will start to become prominent in our consciousness. And finally, when Krishna becomes prominent in our consciousness and prema, love for Krishna develops, finally, the Lord himself, who is an ocean of all wonderful forms and qualities, he himself then appears within the devotee. Devotion makes the Lord reveal himself. And one last part of the comment by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Just as fear of the material world removes the six sense objects from the womb of bhakti, so Kamsa destroyed the six children of Devaki. Just as prema characterized, which has its characteristic as intense service to the Lord. Just as prema necessarily appears in the womb of bhakti after the desire to enjoy the senses is extinguished, so Ananta, the form of service to the Lord, appeared as the seventh child of Devaki. And just as the Lord appears after prema bhakti appears, so Bhagawan himself appears as the eighth child of Devaki after Sesha appears. Okay. Please face Giriraj and perhaps Prabhupada's purports in this pastime from the Bhagavatam, even up to this point, has given you something to pray to Giriraj about. Oh, Gopinath! that's our hint until the curtain closes, but you can call out to Gopinath.
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
And now we'll continue, but as fate has it, we won't get to part two of the process. But do you feel like you have a clear idea of what that first part of the process is? And also was in there the Srila Prabhupada and Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur spoke about the second part of the process, but that will come out even more strongly in the prayers of the that the demigods offer to Krishna within the womb. But I think that's as far as we're going to get today, when the beginning of that, Krishna willing. So, go ahead. Gopinath Prasad. So Krishna speaks to Yogamaya. Okay, now we can harmonium. All auspicious Yogamaya. And Yogamaya was thinking, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, how could I move Balaram from one womb to the next, and Krishna, and our acharyas explained that by my power, you can do it. And therefore calls him O Shubhe, her, O Shubhe, all auspicious one. And Prabhupada's purport here is very interesting. As explained in the previous verses, Yogamaya was requested to attract Krishna, Shankarshan, Baladev from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And this was a very heavy task for her. Yogamaya naturally could not see how it was possible for her to attract or move Shankarshan. Therefore, Krishna addressed her as Shubhe, auspicious, and said, "Be blessed. Take power from me, and you will be able to do it." And then Prabhupada ends his purport by saying, "By the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can do anything." Go ahead, please. Oh, did I miss something? Reading something, yes. "I shall then appear with my full six opulences as the son of Devaki, and you will appear as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, the queen of Maharaj Nanda. By sacrifice," now this is explaining how Yogamaya is going to be appreciated in this world or worshipped as mostly as Mahamaya. "By sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia, because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. Lord Krishna blessed Mayadevi by saying, in different places on the surface of the earth, people will give you different names, such as Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijay, Vaishnavi, Kamuda, Chandrika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sarada, and Ambika. The son of Rohini will also be celebrated as Shankarsan because of being sent from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. He will be called Rama because of his ability to please all the inhabitants of Gokul, and he will be also known as Balabhadra because of his extensive physical strength. So, very interestingly, that in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto, where there's the Namakaran, or the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram, then these three names, these same names, are given by Gauga Muni to Balaram. He calls them Rama, Shankarsan, and Bala, or Balabhadra, because these are his eternal names. Now, thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya immediately agreed with the Vedic mantra, Om, and she confirmed that she would do it. Tateti Om, so be it. I will do, O Lord, as you requested. She would do what he had asked. So having accepted the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she circumambulated him out of respect, and started for the place on earth known as Nanda Gokul. And there she did everything just as she had been told. When the child of Devaki was attracted and transferred into the womb of Rohini by Yogamaya, Rohinim Yoganidraya, so there was Yogamaya also is Yoganidra, or mystic sleep. Devaki, everyone thought that Devaki had a miscarriage. Thus all the inhabitants of the palace loudly lamented, Iti Pora Vichukrushu, alas, Devaki has lost her child. So this Balaram was transferred in the 7th month of pregnancy. That's from the Harivamsa. And the citizens at this time, they suspected that Kamsa had done something, some tantra or something, or out of fear that the miscarriage occurred. And then Sanatana Goswami, or rather, because the Lord had requested Yogamaya to do it very effortlessly. So Yogamaya, this is Sanatana Goswami says, in the middle of the night, Devaki had a miscarriage, and she fell on the ground unconscious. As if in a dream, she saw the child come out of her womb, and she felt some pain for some moments on seeing her child. And Yogamaya then spoke to Rohini in the darkness of night, because Krishna was taking care of this, all these arrangements. And as she slept, she said, the child taken from another womb and placed in your womb will be your son, named Shankarsan. So he soothed her. Her actual son was coming. Then, because this is the moving towards the appearance actually of Krishna. Go ahead. Then, go ahead, please. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul of all living entities, Vishvatma, that word is used again and again here, and who vanquishes all the fear of his devotees, Abhayam Kara, he makes the devotees fearless. He entered the mind of Vasudev in full opulence. Go ahead. So Krishna after Baladev and Sankirtan left, after going back to the analogy, after Prema Bhakti, the consciousness was fully purified. It's fully purified. And then Balaram comes and sanctifies it makes the consciousness into a dham, which means that it attracts Krishna with Prema Bhakti ultimately. And then Krishna appeared and while carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudeva bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, Vrajamana, and thus he became as bright as the sun, Yata Ravi. He became fully effulgent. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceivable. Ati Durdarshanam. No one could look at him, practically speaking, because he was so powerful because of the Lord's presence within him. Even for such formidable men as Kamsa, and not only for Kamsa, but for all the living, for all living entities, Bhutanam. Thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, all the different incarnations enter into Krishna, because he is Bhagavan Swayam. They all enter into him. Then, the fully opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta Angsam, who is all auspicious for the entire universe, Jagat Mangalam, was transferred from the mind of Vasudev to the mind of Devaki, Manastha, situated in Devaki's mind. And Devaki, having been thus initiated by Vasudev, became beautiful by carrying Lord Krishna, the original consciousness for everyone, Sarva Atmakam, who is the cause of all causes, Atma Bhutam, within the core of our hearts he was carrying him, just as the East becomes beautiful by carrying the rising mood, Ananda Karam. Devaki then kept within herself the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these points are so important, because when he first takes birth from Devaki, he's going to be in his forearm form. But right in front of their eyes, Vasudeva and Devaki's eyes, he's going to transfer himself into a beautiful two-arm baby form, and he's going to begin to cry. But yet, he is the cause of all causes. Yet, he is the foundation of the entire cosmos. There's nothing separate from him. Everything is his energy. Being in the form of a small child, he doesn't lose any of his potency. He's always unlimitedly powerful. His expansions, universes come from their skin holes. So when Krishna, and this comes out when Krishna instructs Devaki and Vasudev, he tells them that I want you to think of me as the Supreme Lord and also at the same time as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, excuse me, as your son, as Putra, as your son. You should know both. And interestingly, because they saw Krishna in that way, they saw him with his effulgence illuminating the room. Vasudev saw that, but it wasn't illuminating anything past the room. He could understand the Lord had taken his birth. And then they saw him transform into a small baby. Later on, years later, perhaps 11 years later, when after Krishna killed Kamsa and released Vasudeva and Devaki from prison, he and Balaram walked over to them, and they went to touch their parents' feet, And they became confused. Should we embrace them? He's our son. We have the spontaneous desire to embrace them. But yet we know he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we want to bow down to them. Embrace, bow down, and they became stuck and couldn't move between these two conflicting emotions. But then Yogamaya did her work and covered their seeing him as the Supreme Lord, and then they could embrace him, them. And okay. Devaki kept to himself, but because he was under the arrest of the house of Kamsa, she was like the flames of a fire covered by the walls of a pot. So she was so effulgent, but that potency of Krishna, the effulgence of Krishna, was encased within her. And our acharyas say, even when a fire is encased in a pot, it still has the potency to burn down the entire house, which it will do, the house of Kamsa. That fire, Krishna, will burn it down in time. But also, there's another example. Or like a person who has knowledge but cannot distribute it to the world for the benefit of human society is restricted in distributing knowledge. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on that, which is very extremely important for devotees. A powerful flame will burn down the house of he who restrains it. If you try to keep that powerful flame in the house, it will burn down the entire house. And and when wisdom is blocked by non-distribution, it will destroy its keeper due to the sin of not revealing the truth. So very weighty instruction there. Right now? You want to hear it again? Okay. As a powerful flame will burn down the house of he who restrains it, and wisdom blocked by non-distribution will destroy its keeper due to the sin of not revealing the truth. This is the comment of Srila Jiva Goswami. So Kamsa looked at Vasudev first. They were in prison, and then looked at Devaki. He thought, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ajita Antaram, the unconquerable, the word used is Ajita means unconquerable. He was within. Antaram, was it within her womb, Devaki illuminated the entire atmosphere. So the whole place was effulgent in the place where she was confined. And she was ecstatic because the Lord was within her. So seeing her jubilant, pure and smiling, Suchi Smitam, Kamsa thought, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is now within her, will kill me. Pranahara. How would you literally translate pranahara? He will take away my life. He will kill me. So this is one of the amazing characteristics of Kamsa, that he was fully confident that the Lord was going to kill him. But it didn't cause him to stop his terrible activities. Why? How could that be? We will find out just in a moment, perhaps with the last verse we'll read tonight. The Supreme Personality of God, he will kill me. Devaki has never looked so brilliant and jubilant. Jubilant means ecstatically happy. And then he began to deliberate, and he reached his conclusion. He began to think, what is my duty now? Again, Kamsa trying to understand what he should do. And the Supreme Lord, who knows his purpose, Pritiranaya sadunam vinasya chiduskriyam, he will not give up his prowess. He is all-powerful, and he's going to have his way. But on the other side, Devaki is a woman. She is my sister, and moreover, she is now pregnant. If I kill her, my reputation, opulence, and duration of life will certainly be vanquished. Wait. Just go back, please. So this verse is the answer to a question. If you kill her now, at least you will be able to extend your life. But the answer to this is this verse. No, if I kill her, my life will certainly be vanquished by committing this sinful activity. It will be lessened. And then continuing, Sanatana Goswami says, if one commits such sin, one appears to be living, but is actually dead. And I'll lose my reputation in this life. I will be rejected, just as people avoid a corpse. And after this is that part of the verse. A person who is very cruel is regarded as dead even while living. See, because clearly he had these both natures, but out of fear, his demonic side was somewhat restricted at that particular time. But believe me, it was there, and it never was extinguished. But it was restricted due to his fear. And we also see this sometimes, not our demonic sides coming out, but when we're afraid of something, we become on our best behavior, and we're very polite and very, very humble after we've been embarrassed by the fear that something may happen to us. At least I have seen that within myself. But the demon is still alive inside, and soon as a few hours or days pass, then rawr, I'm back to my usual self. So he's saying that a person who is very cruel, go ahead, Dhammadhara, even while living or after his death, everyone condemns him. And after the death of a person in the bodily concept of life, tanu maninam, he is undoubtedly transferred to the hell known as Andatmana. And Sukadeva Goswami said, deliberating in this way, Kamsa, although determined to continue in enmity towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrained sanivritaha from the vicious killing of his sister, Goda Tamat Bhavat. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then do what was needed. And what was needed, this verse was, Prabhupada included this part in the translation before. The words were Harir. Hari means Lord Hari. Vairanubandha Krit. He was determined to continue in his enmity with Krishna. And this is what makes him a demon. His determination in the core of his heart, even though he knew that he was going to be killed by Krishna. Excuse me. He was determined to never surrender. And he had carried that, as we had mentioned, from a previous life. He was a demon. In the core of his heart, he refused to surrender. And therefore, we can get into a whole discussion now about morality and whatever a demon does is going to end in harm because of this. And whatever a devotee does because of Krishna's mercy, well, he'll gradually improve. Okay, one last verse, and then we shall end for the evening. While sitting on his throne, okay, asina, asan, while sitting, samvidam, samvisham, or lying in his bed, tishtan, or anywhere where he was staying. Bhunjana means eating. Pariyatan mahim, or walking hither and thither. Chintayanto, he was always thinking in great anxiety of Rishikesha, the Lord. He, as Prabhupada says in the purport, in his translation, he was always thinking unfavorably of the Supreme Lord. And apashyat, he observed tanmayam jagat. Everywhere he looked, the depth of his fear was so great. Everywhere he looked, he saw Krishna. But he had no prema, and therefore he had no happiness. Okay, we'll end here because we're a few minutes late. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki jai, Vasudeva Deva ki Mathura Yasoda Nanda Maharaj Śrī Vṛndāvanam ki jai, Nitai Gaur ki jai, Śrīla Prabhupāda Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhagavatam.